This summer's extreme heat is taking a huge toll on crops and water supplies. On Wednesday, the New York Times published an article about how many cities, counties, and states have had to make major repairs on infrastructure because extreme temperatures are making roads buckle and railroads kink. They had another article about the unprecedented rate that Greenland's ice sheet is melting at this year. With so many human difficulties in the news, it's hard for most of us to think about the huge hardships the weather is exacting on birds. Warm-blooded animals, mammals, and birds generate our own body heat, allowing us to stay active at temperatures well below what would still cold-blooded creatures. But when temperatures get above 80 or so, our bodies have to work to dissipate our own heat. We humans sweat. The physical process of evaporation requires heat, and so it cools the skin, in turn cooling the blood carried to the rest of our bodies. Sweating wouldn't work on mammals covered with body fur, so many of them pant. Evaporation on the tongue of panting dogs cools the tongue and the underlying blood supply. Sweating and panting are both water-intensive processes. Birds can't sweat, and their tongues are reduced compared with mammal tongues, so they don't pant in the same way mammals do. Instead, birds flutter the skin at the base of the throat, allowing moisture on that surface to evaporate within the bird's mouth and throat area, retaining much of the actual water inside the bird's body, even as it cools a large area of tissue and the underlying circulating blood supply. Sweating and panting both cause significantly more water loss than does gular fluttering. Also, many mammals excrete wastes as urea, taking out more body fluids than birds expend, excreting those wastes as uric acid. So on two counts, it's easier for mammals to get dehydrated than for birds. Birds are actually more warm-blooded than mammals. Golden crown kinglets maintain a body temperature of about 111 degrees, and many songbird temps are well above 104, approaching the temperature range at which some proteins start denaturing. Birds often grow uncomfortably warm at lower temperatures than mammals do. I often saw the young great blue herons, via Cornell's Nest Cam, start gular fluttering while the air temperature in Ithaca was still well below 70 degrees. I spent several days in Galena, Wisconsin, when afternoon temperatures were rising over 100 degrees. That's way hotter than I can take easily. I was spending most of my time indoors enjoying air conditioning, but looking out on birds that were exceedingly hot. Chickadees and titmice were moving about with their beaks open. Red-winged blackbirds were mostly out of the hot sun, but the ones that were on wires all had their mouths open and their wings slightly extended, so any breeze at all could help dissipate a bit of the heat building up in their underwing area. To give them a bit of relief, my aunt and uncle set out a makeshift bird bath on their deck railing by filling a large flower pot drainage pan with water. Within about a half an hour, chickadees had discovered it, and soon it was a happening place. It also attracted a lot of Japanese beetles who drowned in it, a bit of a nuisance to be clearing out, but overall a big plus because the invasive pests are causing a lot of problems, and this seemed a non-toxic way of reducing their numbers. It's critical to keep bird baths clean. Mosquitoes lay eggs in any standing water they find, and it's only a matter of days between eggs being laid and the adults emerging. But anyone who cares about their birds drinking fouled water anyway. Changing the water every day or two with a quick swipe from a stiff bristle brush every now and then to prevent algae buildup is usually all that's needed to keep a bird bath clean and sanitary through a summer. Most summers, that's a kindness. This year, it's much, much more. I'm Laura Erickson, speaking for the birds.